No matter what my husband does, he's the victim. If the kids don't like him because he yells at them, it's my fault for not facilitating their relationship. If he doesn't have clean clothes because he didn't put them in the bin where I wash them, I'm mean for not hunting down his clothes. It's my fault for not working harder to make him have friends, help him stay close to his family, and a million other things. I'm sure all these men complaining about the male loneliness epidemic are just like him. They're suffering the consequences of their own behavior and they don't like it, so they're blaming others. Somehow, the gender that has hoarded all of the power for itself manages to make itself the victim in the world that it created and owns. Hi, I'm Zon the Lines, and this is the Liberating Motherhood Podcast. As always, I have to plead with you to help support this podcast by sharing it on social media, by leaving a positive review on your favorite podcast platform, heart reacting on Substack, and by leaving comments or otherwise engaging on social media. As you probably noticed, social media algorithms are desperately trying to drive away feminist and leftist creators, and yet we depend on these platforms to spread our message. So we don't want to leave them, we want to dominate them. You can help us do that by giving the algorithm what it wants, and that's engagement. You can also sign up to become a paid subscriber and get at least one bonus podcast episode a month. These actions to promote the podcast really do help, especially becoming a paid subscriber, because subscribers are the sole reason I am able to do this work. I will never accept advertiser money or allow this work to be censored, and so I am dependent solely on you, my listeners. Thank you for being here. For the next month or two, October and November 2025, if you're binging sometime in the future, I'm experimenting with doing a podcast every week instead of my usual twice monthly schedule. I want to see if this pace is sustainable for me and if listeners like it. So I'd love your feedback on whether I should be doing more frequent podcasts. And also, engagement right now really is feedback because it helps increase visibility and helps me assess whether I should continue with this pace. The best feedback is always, again, feeding the nightmare algorithm beast. Much as I wish it were otherwise, that's what enables this podcast to grow. My guest today is going to talk to us directly about the so-called male loneliness epidemic and other aspects of relationships as they come up. I am here today with Elsie DeShay. Hi, Elsie.
Hi, how are you
Thanks so
doing?
much for coming on. I think you are going to love this guest. Let me tell you a little bit about them. Elsie is a genderqueer, IBCLC doula and reproductive health analyst and gender journalist who focuses on sexual ethnography. In the first 15 years of their career, they worked at the UCLA Roxbury and at various clinics on Skid Row, facilitating and coordinating data collection and case management for various risk reduction, sexual, and behavioral health research projects. Once she completed her sexual health counseling and doula training, as well as completed her IBCLC credential at UCSD, she began practicing with her local midwifery and pediatric private clinician group. She spent her time there fighting locally and on a state level to ensure that breastfeeding and perinatal mental health care was approved, covered, and included in ACA healthcare coverage, while advocating for universal health care and paid leave. Elsie also is an assistant instructor for the UC System Global Perinatal and Lactation Program and continued to work in L&D, PEDS, NICU, and other reproductive in and outpatient departments in UC, Providence, and Civic hospitals and clinic systems up until the pandemic and the birth of their fourth child. In the last 5+ years, they expanded their career consulting with healthcare technology companies and communication in the sexual and family health fields to combat the impact of prejudice in technology and media for sexual and gender health. Though proud of their professional life by day, they use their platform as the digital dominatrix to advocate fiercely for the socioeconomic protection of domestic violence victims and sex workers of childbearing age by night. Elsie is also a married parent of four, a gender deconstructionist, and a proud eco-feminist. All of these are just wonderful. Every sentence just makes me want to cheer. I'm so happy to have you here.
It's like so much. I feel like we should have taken half out.
It's never
But
too
thank you.
much. You should never take out things that you have done. You should claim them all.
Appreciate it.
All right. So, well, let's get started. So, I'm so struck by this opening vignette. This came in at like the 11th hour, and I was so glad that it did because
Perfect.
it hits on exactly what we'll be talking about, which is men blaming others for the world they created.
Yeah.
I feel like a lack of accountability for the dominant class is kind of a cornerstone of oppressive systems, whether it's white supremacy, misogyny, ableism, classism, etc. Tell me about what you are seeing with men and loneliness and low accountability in your own work.
You know, it's so funny. So I'm gonna say this up front because I'm such a freaking nerd, and like you know this because you have a window more into my personal life. But can you believe that I found a research study that's actually looking at the sociology and psychology of natural selection? It's called Consistency and Variation in Natural Selection on Personality Traits Across 17 Countries. And what they were studying was quote unquote reproductive success. So I brought that to this. We're just going to leave it. I'm not going to talk about it right now. But I'm saying this because, like, for those of us who like to have that little like scientific joker card in the back pocket, right? Like that ace in the side pocket. This is truly, truly a phenomenon that is really happening. And my deep belief as a sociologist, as an ethnographer, that men are reaping reaping the results of natural selection in an environment that they created under the guise that it was going to give them the most success. And now that it has unfortunately ricocheted back onto them negatively, now they don't like it. As you said, the irony of this is that they're in control. So if they don't like it, there's always two choices: adapt, change the system, or the third choice, do both. What I see in my work, it depends on which part of my work I'm talking about. Everybody always wants to know about the digital dominatrix part. So I do relationship coaching, and I call it coaching because I work with, it doesn't happen often. I don't take on a lot of clients at a time. I take on one, maybe two maximum, and two really is the maximum for me emotionally because I just like don't have a lot of patience for male whining, and unfortunately that's something even I deal with. They get better. That's kind of the point, is to help them in the best angels of their nature to improve whatever that case may be. But what a lot of people don't know is that my references are almost always through their femme partners. So men are sent to me by their wives. And I want to start off with that because I think when people hear dominatrix and digital and all of these other things, they assume that it's kind of like pornography. No shade to, you know, the girls and girlies and ladies who are in porn. No shade whatsoever. That's a different conversation, right? But they assume that it's like something that's done in the dark, that people are coming to me, and that is not how I operate. The vast majority of the time, it's men who are in very sensitive positions where they may have therapists, but their therapy is associated with their job somehow, or they're just so tied up socially that they need to have a situation where they can be in an NDA. And the way that I protect myself, because I need to protect myself under those circumstances, that I only take men who are referred by a femme person. And the femme person is their accountability partner. Whether they participate in the sessions or not is irrelevant to me, but they have to know about them, and the man knows that in the beginning. And so I'm getting people who were already at least supposedly wanting to change, but they know my philosophy. And my philosophy is that if you do not like the circumstances that your current status, right, your current behavior patterns, your habits, the decisions that you've made, or the situation that you've ended up in, if you don't like what that's yielding, your biggest challenge as a human being on this earth and the time that you have is going to be to adapt one way or another. And so that's the work that I do. And I am constantly pushing them in every session, every chat conversation, every day that this is natural selection. And if you would like to be naturally selected, here are the ways that you need to which probably sounds cold-hearted, but you'd be amazed how much success I have with that. So
I
that's
don't
my
think it
little
sounds
spiel.
cold-hearted at all. Okay, I have many questions.
Go
So
ahead.
if you're working with men who are referred by women who are generally their partners, this selects out like 95% of men. So
Absolutely.
you're kind of already working with quote unquote the best men.
I hate phrasing it that way, and
I
it also
know.
makes me sad for obvious reasons, but
Yeah.
sure, relatively speaking.
But let's
At least
talk
the
about
best intentions. They have the best intentions. I can agree with that.
So
Yes.
let's talk about with these like supposedly well-intended men. What
Yeah.
I'm really interested in is the discrepancy you're seeing between what their partners are telling you and what they're telling you. Like, tell me about that dynamic, because we rarely get a window into what that looks like when men hire any kind of help professional.
I mean, the discrepancy narrows as time goes by, or else they don't stay on my caseload. I can tell you that much. My patience is short with that level of disparity. But in the beginning, it can be pretty profound. And frankly, the reason why they're there is because of a disparity. So the vast majority of the time, these are people who have been married for a significant period of time. Like I have yet to get a newlywed, and I feel like I need to put that out there. And it's not because I wouldn't be interested or willing, but I also think that the men who were coming, they have so much to lose. Does that make sense? So the women who are in these scenarios, they have a certain amount of leverage, I would say. And they've basically told them that oftentimes they have prenups or postnups. And I'm putting this out there too so that people who are listening can be like, what is this about? And sort of get a concept, right? But in terms of the disparity is often that it's usually just that the wife is fed up, to be perfectly honest. So most of the time, it isn't even like a situation where the man's like, I am doing my best. Frequently, he's like, I know my best isn't good enough, but like, it's what I've got. And she's like, screw that, you know, like she's like 10 years in or whatever's happening. And what I frequently hear from the wives, I actually have had one couple who was gay, so I can't say the wives. So what I frequently hear from the domestic partner, wife or not, is that I've kept up my end of the deal and then some. I've been gracious, I've been patient, and he just doesn't fulfill his commitments. Like, you know, he like we've gone to counseling, we've gone to therapy, right? We've done all these things, and every time he does, he comes out with the language, right? He comes out with the ideology, and it sounds so good, but he never delivers. And so the interesting disparity is the standard. It's not even in my situation, right? It's not even like, am I cleaning? Am I not cleaning? It's who is this enough for? I don't know if that makes sense. And the wife is like, this is no longer enough for me. Do you know what I mean? And the man's like, I understand that this isn't enough for her, but it's what I've got. However, I'm not willing to lose what I have, right? Because I'm not doing enough for this person, even though I think I'm doing enough. So it's an interesting tension. And I do think it's different than a lot of, obviously. I mean, you know, people out here don't know this, but I'm a divorcee. I'm divorced. I'm not with my first husband. I'm in my second and hopefully to God, my last marriage. I'm very, very happy in this marriage. But my first marriage, I barely survived. And I mean that very sincerely, like in medical, psychological, and legal terms, barely made it out of that marriage. And so I'm not getting marriages in that level of crisis. When I, you know, I work with a lot of nonprofits, and I work with a lot of like doula consortiums, right? And I work with like all sorts of things where I volunteer. I haven't taken money like for any of these positions. I'm volunteering, right? And various like people who work with shelters or whatever. You have all sorts of collectives to help those who are dealing with domestic violence, trying to leave, people who are being trafficked. And that's a completely different thing because I'm never working with the perpetrators in those scenarios. Does that make sense? So I want to make that distinction. So yeah, the disparity here is more or less the standard with the people I'm dealing with. The man is like, I would like my efforts as opposed to like the outcomes from my efforts, or I want my intentions to be good enough. And their femme partners, the vast majority of the time femme, are like that it is not good enough, right? Like I want results and I want them now when it
I
comes
mean,
down
that's
to it.
also what I tend to see with men. And what I think often underlies it is not, I can't do better. It's, I don't want to do better than is necessary. It's still like a desire to do the bare minimum.
The
So,
bare minimum, absolutely.
what are these men saying to you about why they're not doing better?
It depends. I have to be honest, a lot of the cases, at some point we find that there's an addiction problem. And the and I mean that's I don't want to say sincerely like there's fake addiction problems, but you know, some people are like, hey, it's addicted to sugar. Okay, that could be the case, but there's so many metabolic things, right? Like underlying stuff like that that is super convoluted. I don't mean that. I mean literally like his wife finds out that he's been snorting cocaine. addiction problem. Like, he's a functioning alcoholic. I mean, literal in the most like basic and legal sense, a dependency issue. And so for me, the beginning of my career, because I did risk reduction this whole entire time with, maternal child health and homelessness, or all of the things that I was a community caseworker and then a research case manager for, along with being in the hospital, it always usually involves some sort of triangulation, right? Of like dependency and then just unhelpful social habits that result, right, from unresolved traumas. And underneath every single one of those things is oftentimes severe trauma. And by severe trauma, I mean these men have survived profound sexual assault. They've been in jail. Like, even if they're super successful, they had, what some would describe as a junkie for a parent, really intense stuff that has never been resolved, that they've never been treated for, that they've never discussed with anybody. At least 50% of the time, their wives don't even know that this is something that's in their background. And I can honestly say that in my cases, it is extremely common that that's the trajectory.
I mean, that's just wild to me that they're having this level of difficulty in their marriage and their partners don't even know. They don't even know
Correct.
who they're with.
Correct. They don't. Yeah.
What do you talk to me about that? What is that?
I mean, I think that that's, I think unfortunately that is the petri dish that patriarchy has created that it requires of men. Men, that is the soft underbelly of men having to live up to their own demands. It's very, I find it that it's actually pretty uncommon that men have been able to skirt along and claim a masculine identity without having been assaulted with one of the nastier edges of masculinity. But the problem is their own problem. And I don't mean a specific person, I mean collectively, as long as this identity and this demand and this power structure is maintained. The issue with being hazed into this identity is that you're expected to endure the worst of it and still praise it and also ignore all of the trauma that you dealt with, because like that's the payment. That's what you pay. You pay in blood to be a man. And then they literally pass off all of these terrible things, right? Like either being assaulted by a friend when they were younger. I put, friend in parentheses. Let's not even get into, which one of, in the military, it's everything you can ever possibly imagine. That could be a completely different podcast, right? But even like in tech and stuff, it's just a lot of these men, when they go to college, the things that they endure when they get into fraternities is things, it belongs in Vice, in a Vice file. It's horrible. And there's this code of silence that it seems like all of them take because they're told this is what you do in exchange, right? To be called a man. And then I feel, to me, and this is what I tell them, they spend their lives perpetuating the trauma that is festering inside of them on everyone around them. They're making everybody else pay, right? Like they're passing the buck off of this social debt rather than dealing with it. And to me, this gets to the whole, the reason why men harass women is because they're afraid of other men. Have you seen those like reels and stuff? Have you seen any of those on social media, that the reality of why men bully women is because they're afraid of other men? Like they could be going to the source of the root of the problem, but the fact of the matter is they're also afraid of the men that we're afraid of. And I feel like that really gets to the root of the problem, and it's something that I see in almost all of my cases.
Yeah, I mean, to me, I'm seeing a lot of parallels here to how white women cozy up to white supremacist patriarchy.
Precisely. Yes, absolutely. Unfortunately, yes.
I don't think I had specifically tracked it that way before, but yeah, it's the same kind of thing as seeking protection from the very system that you built and benefit from, but are also
Right.
victimized by.
Correct.
You know, one thing that I'm thinking about while you're talking about men and trauma is this idea that, you know, men experience trauma and then they have to inflict that trauma on others so that they don't have to
I
deal
mean,
with
they don't have to, but they
Well,
certainly do,
yeah. Or they
right? Like
feel
it's
like
their
they have
habit.
to. And like
Yes,
that's the
yes.
normal way to deal with things. And then we
Right.
contrast that with women who are also experiencing trauma, who are
Right.
then like, let me get therapy, let me get
Right.
self-help, let
Let me
me
get a
get
healthy group of friends. Let me
yeah.
volunteer at my local like city shelter. Let me do something productive and positive with my
Yeah.
time.
And we see this, we see this in so many ways. We see this with women in postpartum depression, where women get
Yep.
depressed and they say, what can I do to fix me? Men get
Yes.
depressed and they say, well, I'm going to smash the whole house and that's your fucking problem.
Correct. And then you should love me for it. I think
And
that's
love
where
me
the
for it.
standards
Yeah.
come in, right?
Yeah.
Love
Love
me
unconditionally.
with no boundaries and no conditions whatsoever, including when that involves harming you as well. This is part of loving me. You're welcome. And it's like, have you out of your mind? But they are a little bit. And they are a little bit because this is the process that they take. Like, this is the price that they feel like. This is not me. This is not like my personal belief. But I can tell you that this is what I'm hearing in terms of how it affects them. Like, this is the price they paid to become a man.
All right, so speaking of this like love me with no boundaries and no conditions thing, because I
Yeah.
do think that this is really something that men have been socialized into, that they are entitled to love, they are
Yes.
entitled to love no matter what, and that
Yes.
anything less than total love with no conditions is not love at all. And
Yes.
women get the opposite of like we're not entitled to
Yes.
anything no matter what. Where I see this a lot, and where I imagine that you have seen this a lot in your career, is in the notion that men deserve care and support from their partners after their partners have given birth. Women, it seems, are expected
Lord.
to immediately rise to the occasion. They could be bleeding from two open wounds. They could have just survived a
And they frequently
hemorrhage.
are.
Yeah, and they frequently
They
are. They could have
frequently
not
are.
slept in
Yeah.
5 days.
Which is also their husband's fault if they have
Which
a
is
husband.
also
Like,
their
don't even
husband's
get me
fault.
started,
They
right?
have
Like,
mastitis. They're trying
right.
to deal with a kid. They're
Yes.
dealing at like peak human capacity. And the
Yes.
husband's like, let's focus on the real victim here, me.
Well, this is where we get to the part of the podcast that you're going to have to edit out the misandrous things that I say because I have zero. Words. I don't have any kind words for that. Like my response to that is those people do not deserve offspring at this time. Like, and people are gonna get mad, and I really don't care. I'm serious. If you are not prepared to take care of both the baby that you made with the person who bears the brunt of all reproductive processes, traumas, scars for the rest of their life, if you're not prepared to care for them and to love them, you don't deserve progeny at this time. And like, I'm sure people are like, oh, she sounded so nice in the beginning. No, I'm called this little dominatrix for a reason. I'm super serious. And like, I have a whole little workbook on why you don't. And like, I'm not coming from a eugenics standpoint. I'm not saying you should never have children, but I am certainly saying right now you should not. Not for the sake of your partner. It is not safe for that baby that this person just had. Like, it simply isn't safe. And you should have never put anybody, let alone the most innocent of people, right? The infant, nor the person who had the infant in that position. I don't have additional comments.
Yeah, well, I mean, I
How I
think, I
feel
mean,
about
I
it.
would go further and say it's not just that you don't deserve to have children. I don't think you really deserve love at that point.
I mean, certainly that is, yeah, like, I'm clearly this is the maternal child health specialist in me. I'm going directly to reproductive outcomes, but I feel like love's not even on the table. You're a
Yeah.
danger to all of the people you brought into the world, so we can't even discuss that, right? Like, at this point in time, you clearly can't take care of yourself. You are not in a position as an adult to demand extra beneficial treatment when you can't take care of yourself. And you're unwilling to take care of the people that you're responsible for being here in the situation with you. So I think my mind just like blanks out that request. So yeah, yes, I agree with you, but I like disposed of that desire,
Not
like
even going to
as soon
consider
as
it.
not even considering it.
All right. So one thing that I saw, like when I was doing more reproductive justice kind of work that relates to this, with men just demanding love from the person who is the most exhausted and demoralized that she has
Yeah.
ever been, is the ways that men actively undermine their partners in early parenting. Whether it was setting
Elaborate.
them up for breastfeeding failure. ignoring their emotional needs when they're giving birth. I mean, I know so many men who just said horrible things to their partners when they were giving birth, or who slept through the whole thing, checking out during postpartum,
Well, you know,
just.
it's the most high risk time period for domestic violence and IPV is the time period between pregnancy and 18 months postpartum. That's like 2 years. It's like 2 years and 2 months. It's a ridiculous amount of time.
And it's, yeah, and we like to, we frame this as like, oh, he's just struggling. It's so hard for him. And
No,
maybe she has
whatever.
postpartum
What kind
pain.
of person resorts to abusing other human beings when they're struggling? I mean, like, these are the questions I ask when people, why is that your default setting for I'm having a hard time? I become a miserable, monstrous person. I want people to answer me when they say things like that. Because what other people do we excuse? We don't excuse other people. If your doctor does malpractice to you, and then you're like, he's like, oh, he was just having a bad day. Okay, and he killed someone. Like, how is that supposed to an excuse? We don't allow people in other contexts to get away with that. It's there's no reason other than straight up sexism that we allow men to skirt off with that excuse. And for me, when I tell the men who I'm working with, I ask them straight out, like, don't you feel bad about yourself? Mean,
No, they
granted,
don't.
no, you know what? They do. But again, this is the people who I'm getting. I can't, there's plenty of people who don't. Trust me, I divorced one of them, right? He did not feel bad about what he was doing. That's why we're not together anymore. There's a lot of people like him, unfortunately. But there are some men who really do feel bad. They really do feel guilt and shame. And I have to tell them that is your conscience attempting to tell you that you could have made a better decision. Now, how can we take this energy, right, that you're harboring, that is making you feel bad about yourself and therefore perpetuating you behaving badly with other people? Because whenever you're harboring self-loathing, it never improves how you treat other human beings. And I tell them that. But I frequently will just go straight for the jugular. Don't you feel bad about yourself? And they're like, oh my God, I do. And I'm like, yeah, okay. Well, would you like to feel better? You want to feel better, you have to act better. Are you ready to do the work? It's just a frequent question that I have for them. Because my thing is, like, you're never, even if you try to be better and it's difficult in the process of trying and failing to create new pro-social habits, you'll never feel worse than you do when you're harming another person. And, like, granted, there are some men that are, I think, I don't want to say that they're beyond hope, but, like, I'm not the right person to see you. If they're redeemable, right? Because I may not think that they are. Maybe somebody else needs to handle those cases. But in these situations where the men are like, my wife sent me to you and I don't want to lose everything. I know I'm bad at what I'm doing. Can you help me? Like, am I salvageable? I know that if they're coming to me with this, that they are, but I have to get them, instead of asking somebody else, you tell me, I can't do this for you. Are you salvageable? Like, are you capable of doing the work? And sometimes I dig into that masculinity aspect of, like, oh, I'm so strong, I'm so this and that. And then I'm like, okay, well, prove it. Prove it, you know? Like, prove it according to you. This is the man that you are, but nobody's going to believe you if you keep acting like this. And so I basically, you know, I go through this process of, like, sort of redefining what it means to be a man with them. And we have to come up with it, you know, this is where it helps for men to be literate. So few of them are, but frequently the ones who are coming to me, again, I'm dealing with a different cohort. It's a different sample size of men. Frequently they are pretty literate. And so we can dig into, you know, like art and all of these different ideas, almost like archetypes, right? That they can compare themselves to and what they would rather be or what they can combine. But yeah, it's nobody deserves love when they're acting like that. And sometimes the most simple thing I have to do is role playing with them of, like, imagine you were a woman or this and that or whatever. I'm being very simplistic right now, but some form of role playing. And as soon as I get them to start going through that, or I assign them, like, you need to read this play, or, like, whatever's happening, they come back and they'll send me this text inevitably of, like, I'm a douchebag. I'm like, well, you have been, but you don't have to be. So what's it gonna be, right? Like, that's a decision. You can change it today if you want to.
So you
But,
actually
like,
are
that's how
making
I deal with it.
progress. Like they
Yeah, I
actually,
am. Although they don't get to decide if they're making progress. Like, they can tell me how they don't. They can tell me how they feel when the person who referred them, who is, you know, on the receiving end of the relationship they're trying to save, that person is the judge. And that's part of the agreement. It's literally in my contract with them. But you don't get to decide. Like, if they want to decide whether or not they're doing a good job in their relationships, what on earth do they need a coach or a therapist or anybody else for? Do you know what I mean? Like, why
Yeah.
bring somebody else into that just self-flagellation process? Nobody needs to be involved if you've already decided that you're the police officer and the jury and the judge of your own behavior. That's a waste. So they
Actually,
don't get
that's
to
such
decide.
like it's such an insightful model, and I actually because and I think it highlights what tends to go wrong in traditional therapy, because what
Yes.
typically happens in therapy is couples go into therapy, and I think they really go into therapy to have someone tell them who's right and who's wrong.
Right,
But
right.
really, if your relationship is not working for you, you're right. Like you're allowed to
Right.
just ask for what you need. And so for you
Correct.
to go back to the woman and say, okay, well, is he doing it now?
Right.
This, I just think this really hits on what's going wrong in couples therapy.
At least as it pertains to this particular aspect, right? That this niche that I'm dealing with. I mean, I have had a couple lesbian couples over the years, which this is a completely different conversation that we can have later, where one of, the femmes in the relationship, I suspected there was like some IPV and stuff happening. I'm mentioning that because often it's the male identified person, the more masculine person, the more androgynous person. Saying this as an androgynous person who's given birth and breastfed for 10 years, I think that it's fascinating how much concepts of identity and even identifying with an idea, how we view that idea, what we believe we deserve, and what type of behavior we think that we should expect. It impacts everybody who internalizes it. So I say that because, part of my model is archetypal, right? And so even that, like, I'm basically practicing Jungian psychology. One of the reasons why I, in part, not in total, but in the concepts that I'm leading people towards, one of the reasons why I stopped, because I was going before I got my most recent degree, I had 3 degrees and they were all basically psychology in some way, shape, or form. And then I switched entirely and I went to sociology with the last one. But constantly people were like, you're so close, right? Like to being an actual therapist with a full license. I have all of these like credentials and counseling credentials and certificates and whatever. But when I started shadowing people, I was like, ew, this is wasteful. Like I just felt like because the way that the Western psychology is done does not allow, like, it considers it biased to talk about the bias that is innate within social structure. Do you know what I mean? And so it's so circular and it completely avoids the origin of folks' problems, which is the innate biases within the identities that we are either born into or that we adopt within a stratified society. Well, how am I supposed to break down the origin of this person's entitlement? Do you know what I mean? Like, how do we talk about where these unspoken expectations come from if they existed before the relationship, if I can't talk about sociological structures, right? Like in therapy. So I just exited that entirely because I had already had friends who were full-on psychiatrists, psychologists, right? They were, LCSWs, MSWs, all of these other things. And they practiced for 10 years and they were like, I'm not getting anywhere. And all of them were Black, Indigenous, right? What queer, whatever was happening. And they stopped and they became coaches so that they could incorporate basically a decolonial view into their therapy and be more forthright with people, right? About like, where are you actually getting your ideas, both about other people's behavior and about what you think you deserve or how you should be allowed to act from? Because there's so few. You don't talk about that in CBT, right? Like you don't. And so, yes, to your point, it's trying to circumvent the problem that that regular Western psychology does, which circles the drains of the origin of people's behaviors, right? So, yes.
That's an amazing point, and I hope listeners will just like rewind and listen to that over and over again, because that is why therapy is going wrong, is that
Yeah.
therapists have to treat all perspectives as equally valid, and they're not.
They're absolutely not. I mean, they're valid and they're valuable as we're
Yeah.
getting like in, because you're trying to resolve a problem and therefore you need to know what in the world is motivating this person to continue a behavior that's not having like healthy outcomes either in themselves or other people, but valuable in the context of I'm trying to solve this problem, and valued in the context of this is a general idea that is good and other people should attach themselves to are two completely different things. And I feel like they get conflated in Western therapy, and I just don't have the patience for that. I don't think it's fruitful.
So I want to go back to something you were talking about a few minutes ago, which is
Sure.
this idea that a lot of men have, basically that they shouldn't have to feel bad about themselves. And I see this a lot when women confront their partners with inequality, and their response is, well, fine, I guess I'm just an abusive asshole and I should just die. And then she has to comfort him.
I'm not laughing because it's funny. I was laughing because most recently in one of my coaching sessions, the wife was finally like, sure, like very flatly. But it allowed us to get somewhere because she was like, you know what, whatever. If that's the conclusion you want to make from me asking you to be a better person, then on some level you are no longer useful. And this is exactly what she said to him, and he actually had a light bulb moment, right? Because he was no longer being coddled emotionally on
Yeah. Well,
the
thank God for that.
side.
But it reminds me, so I just did this interview with the philosopher Kate Mann, and she's been starting to write a little bit about how I want to do justice to her idea and not overstate it. You know, being in a permanent state of shame, I think we all agree, is not good for you. But what she argues is that shame in itself is not bad, because we need
No, it
to think
isn't.
about, you know, there are bad actions, but when you undertake those bad actions for long enough, that starts to mean something about you as a person. And you then
Correct.
have the ability to change that. And the only way you can really change that is if you confront what those actions mean about you as a person. And I think that this
Yes.
is something that structures of power bake into the mix that powerful
Yes.
people should not have to do. And we also see it, especially with like white women in anti-racist spaces, of like, I'm
Yes.
the greatest ally who ever lived. How dare you question me?
Think of all the
Yeah.
things
And I just,
I
you know, but I see the
do
parallel
for
with men too, of like, you're
you.
not allowed to
Constantly.
make me feel bad. You can only
No.
confront me with the bad things I've done if you don't make me feel like a bad person. But what I'm
Right, as
starting
long
to
as you say it's
wonder,
okay that I did them.
yeah, is if
It's just a
maybe,
little boo-boo. It's
like,
fine.
maybe you need to feel like you're a bad person to
Right.
change. I mean, I remember a very, very powerful experience for me in middle school. Was I went to like a really diverse school, and I just like I always mostly had black friends. And then to like my little white brain in middle school, something changed, and I didn't understand what it was. And then some of my like black friends kind of like confronted me, and they were very angry with me, and they said, you know, you don't understand what life is like for us, basically. And I was like so hurt, because I was like, my friends have rejected me, and I didn't do anything to them, and you know, look how good I am. And I remember like I went home and I told my mom, and she said, well, you're not actually good if you're not listening to them.
Ooh.
And like
Hey.
I just like,
Five stars, mom.
yeah. And
It's
so I
so
just like,
simple, but it's so insightful, right? It just
yeah.
makes you rethink everything that you're doing.
And so I just like sat with that, and then I like kind of like worked it out with my friends, and then didn't really have those problems like with my black friends anymore. And it was,
Amazing.
I think, because I was periodically like willing to sit with like, oh, they're like undertaking the risk of being friends with an oppressor, and like I need to
Yes,
periodically
absolutely
sit
that.
with what that could mean about me if I don't listen to them. And I just, you know, I see a lot of parallels between that and how men are.
When I do my podcast, will you promise to come on and talk about that? Because I want to talk more about that. I do. I think that's lovely. And I want it lovely, like the process, right? Not the stress involved, but the outcome.
Right.
And I wish everybody would be open to transformation. I think that's where I can bridge these two topics, right? I think though too, this is, this gets to when I'm talking about decolonizing psychology. I don't know that this is an explicit, it's not an explicit part of psychology because it's certainly not what we're taught any of the times I got any of my degrees. But I do think it is an implicit part of colonial collective mindset is the staticness of identity. And that is in such direct contrast to all beliefs that affirm Afro, Indigenous, Asiatic, anything besides white people. And so, getting to your point about the shame and even to your experience so young, which seemed like you had so much more ease, although I really do give like a super big high five to your mom because that was such a wonderful way for her to point it out with you without demonizing you. And I do think that that's important, right? We do want people to change. So even if we tell people you did something that was shit, excuse my French, it's not the same as telling people that they are shit, right? Like those are different things. And there may be appropriate times for both, but I think for all of us, it's important to think about the difference. The function of shame, when you look at these like honor shame culture and all of that stuff, which certainly I come from an honor shame culture, the function of shame in its most useful format is to lead one to remorse. And remorse is an agent of change. It's literally a catalyst, just like anger. It's supposed to point out to you, you feel bad because you did something bad. But that's not the same as I did something bad, therefore I am bad indefinitely, right? And I feel like that's for some weirdo reason, both where men and white people in general get stuck. Like doing an action is not prescriptive, even when it's a habit, even when it's a lifestyle that you've done for decades. Every day that you get up, you can change, right? We see this in biology, we see this in zoology, we really see it in every aspect of life, except for this strange push and pull that's been created by colonial society. And I really do believe it's unnatural. Like, I deeply believe that a lot of men's anxiety that they feel is trying to uphold this delusion about masculinity being static and being concrete, because gender is none of those things, right? Let alone masculinity. And I feel like when if people would just let this go, then also the accountability process now is able to take root. Of course, if the accountability process takes root, then the whole system is also going to have to transform, and there's plenty of people invested in that not happening. Also, right? Like, different conversation there. But for people who were listening who were wondering why what I'm doing works, I think there's various reasons. But I think the biggest thing is that to find out that you are not stuck in a situation or an identity or a belief system or even a status level that you were born into, forced into, expected to go into, finding out that you could change it and maintain your worth and also maintain your power. I don't mean power in the sense of force. I mean power in the sense of responsibility, right? Power in the capacity for you to determine what type of impact you have on the world around you and the people in your life. When I'm able to translate to men, like, you can choose, you can still call yourself a man and you can still have power, but imagine if you used your power and you made everyone around you feel really good because you know good and well everybody in your life loathes you at the moment. And wouldn't you like to change that, right? Like, I do, being so honest, I feel like some of the people who've been in my caseload are going to listen to this and be like, oh no, she tells everybody this. Not everyone. I do customize it for the situations. So this is like my little evangelism spiel, I guess. That's what I sound like. Like, yeah, that's what I do.
But I mean, that's such a beautiful message that like change is the natural course of things and that,
Yes. Don't you want to change in a good way? I've asked this too. Like, you're going to change. You're fighting it and it is futile. Wouldn't you like to take control over the way you're changing
Like it's never
and be
too
proud
late.
of it?
It's
It's
never
never
too
too
late to
late.
be good.
Never. Yes. And even if you're bad one day, granted, the consequences may be the people that you dealt with that day don't want to deal with you anymore, and that's sad, and we'll have to go through a grief process. But there's four, there's billions of other people. I should say 4 billion. I think we're at 8 billion now. My brain is like 20 years ago. It's billions of other people on the planet, and you can redeem yourself as long as you got up today. It's possible. You would be amazed how many men tell me that they get a sense of liberation. I get a lot of crying. I get a lot of journaling. Like, I get a lot of things. Most of my clients end up going back into therapy and psychiatry because those are good tools to work out certain things. But I think social liberation needs a different model, and we currently don't have any therapy processes that offer the type of coaching that I'm getting and that I know some of my other colleagues are giving. Not that I know of, not formally.
Yeah.
So I'm just trying to fill the void at the moment.
Well, that's great. It's thoughtful and it's a wonderful place to end things. Elsie, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been amazing to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, as always, I will put all of Elsie's info in the show notes, and there's tons more resources that you can check out. And I will be back next week.